Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Eric German. I'm really happy. This is going to be a good show. I've never had a music attorney on this show. I've had, or entertainment lawyer, or however you want to describe it, because Eric wears a lot of different hats, but obviously he's a juris doctor, and I am not, so I bow to him. And Emily's father, I believe, is a juris doctor, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Emily. So Eric German's here. He's in the studio. Just gave him a pretty cool tour. And I think that you're going to learn a lot from this. If you don't learn a lot, you're not listening, because he is an encyclopedia. And I'm going to stop kissing his ass right now. So the next few weeks are great. We've got a whole bunch of different guests. Actually, I believe, let me look. Holy cow. We've got Shane Told.
Yeah.
That's big. That's big for me because I really like Silverstein, and I'm not even doing it because he's the singer of Silverstein. I'm having him on because he has a really good podcast called Lead Singer Syndrome, and I'm pretty sure that he gets asked a million questions about Silverstein all the time, and I'll ask him a few, and I'll ask more about the podcast. So I think you're going to learn a little bit. He's a very accomplished musician, and I've trimmed the focus of the show to be more 90% people behind the scenes and 10% usually musicians, and this is kind of like a combination of it. So this is really exciting. The following week, I believe we have, drumroll please, doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop, Mike Mowry, who has his own company called Outer Loop Management. And before I ventured to the dark side, I was playing guitar probably every single day, and I don't play as much as I want to now, but Ice Nine Kills, oh my God, they're such a technically proficient band, and Mike is an accomplished podcaster in his own right, and he has a management company, a label. He wears about 73 different hats, so that's going to be another informative one. After that, we have another drum roll, please. We've got Corey Rutschlin. Now, most people listening to this, in fact, I would argue that 99.9% of the people listening to this have no idea who he is. Corey Rutschlin used to be the lead singer in a band I was in called Greenlight Theory. So I think that that show is going to be really interesting because we're going to actually break down what broke us down. So stick around for that. Actually, stay on Adobe for 3 consecutive weeks. Do not leave. Do not bathe. Do not eat. Stay on Adobe. I try to make the show really informative and educational and ruin people's lives. So after that, we have one more guest, and we've got Mara at Superior Music Publishing. And I have never had anyone from that end on the show. So this year is awesome. Eric German's awesome. Emily Burke's awesome. Adobe's awesome. Eric is dancing. Just so you know, I literally just witnessed it. And last time I saw Eric, I had ice cream with him and his daughter. And besides being an incredible, incredible attorney who knows so much it's scary, he actually is a very good ice cream companion. So let it be known that the metal world is also sponsored by Cold Stone. So stick around for Waldman's Words every single Tuesday night at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern Seaboard time. And Emily Burke, what time are we on Sunday mornings?
8 a.m. Eastern.
So fucking early if you live in California or Oregon, 5 a.m. Again, I don't want you to ever turn Adobe off for the next 3 weeks, so you'll be tuning in to the rerun episode at 5 a.m., so thank you, on Sunday. And we will begin shortly. Hello. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Hi, Eric.
Hello, Scott.
Wow, that was a radio voice. You're starting the show with a radio voice.
That's right.
Eric German, when's the last time you've done one of these podcasts or shows or anything? Because I saw one, I'd say, a month or two ago. So I'm very curious.
I did the Unstoppable Recording Machine podcast with Eyal Levy.
Okay.
Really cool.
Sounds like a really good non-Jewish person.
I guested on Blasco's Managemental podcast, which is also done with Mike Mowry, who I understand is forthcoming on your show.
He is forthcoming. He is forthright. He is the, I guess, what's a good Star Wars thing? Like the fourth? That's like a Lisp version of Star Wars, right?
Yeah, totally.
Emily, totally adding to this contribution right now. Do you have anything that you want to say about Mike Mowry, or do you want to just get to the juice of Eric German?
Eric German's here,
So. I know. So let's talk about Mike Mowry for the next little segment.
Mike's got a killer man bun. He looks very reasonably athletic.
I'd say beyond reasonably athletic.
Definitely, you talk about a man of many hats. He seems to have quite a few. He seems to have figured out a lot about the modern music business, how to make things go, and particularly this world of podcasting. I listen to several podcasts that he's associated with on his network. I believe it's called Jabberjaw.
Well, I have a Jabberjaw just thinking about his many hats. And what's crazy is you brought up Blasco briefly, and then we're going to actually get to you, but we've had two people from Mercenary Management on this show. We had Chris and we had Dan, so I guess we hear about this company a lot in Waldman's Words. There's lots of companies, but they're definitely a prominent hard rock metal company with, I mean, Zakk Wylde, say no more.
He
can play a tour thing on a guitar. I just stuttered because he's that good at the guitar.
Indeed.
Anyway, so to Eric German, how did we meet?
We met because someone I know, Mr. Lauren Israel, who is a band kind of guru.
Wait, stop. Did I not just use that word with you? Guru in the car?
Oh, you did.
Anyway.
Well, he is a band guru. He is sort of a football coach for bands, as they say, and one of the best ears I know in music. He discovered Jimmy Eat World and
Plain White
Sugar
Tees.
Cult and Plain White Tees and Neon Trees and a bunch of bands like that. So when Lauren calls me up and says, hey, you ought to check out this band or this sounds cool, I take that reasonably seriously. I do think for myself, but there is a short list of people that I take, you know, when they say, listen to this link, I pretty much drop what I'm doing and listen to the link.
It's in your best interest to do that.
Absolutely. Everything I do is in my best interest, Scott. That's why
That's a typical attorney response. Everything I do. Everything means 100% of the time. So that's awesome that you have that much foresight.
Well, I had enough foresight to listen to the link. And it turned out that the band was really cool. But there were reasons why the band wasn't something that worked out for me to work with. But I made a new friend, Mr. Scott Waldman. Hit up the band, or I hit up Scott, I think. Mm-hmm. On the internet and said, this band's pretty cool. Tell me about it. We got on the phone. We talked.
We talked for a long time.
Yeah, and a few times in a few different meetings, and here we are. I became a fan of Scott Waldman.
Well, thank you for that.
And it's led to Cold Stone meetings on
meeting.
4th of July. Was it the 4th
of
July?
The 4th of July I flew to New York. I believe it was a day or two before that, but it was early July or late June. But the meeting was so fruitful, pun intended, that we went to a Jewish deli right afterwards.
That's right. The Jewish deli that my daughter came along and ordered everything on the menu, and Scott told
I tried to help eating.
It was very fun. So, you know, I always look for good people, good-hearted people. I like people that like things. I like people that are passionate about things. And I like people that like people. And I think you fall into a few of those categories, Mr. Waldman.
I really wish that you guys could see how red my face is right now. And so I thank you, ditto, and I just want to make an extension of that. Emily Burke, he's saying about me, before we end this love fest and get to the meat, pun intended with meat, you are that to me. So this triangle is just constantly...
It's getting steamy in
It's here. Getting... Oh my God, yeah.
This episode's the best.
It's amazing. You got two married men saying nice things about everyone in this room collectively. It's
there
dope.
You go.
All right.
Well, I do want to mention that sometimes when you do reach out to a band and it doesn't work out, or sometimes when you're thrust into a situation with someone that you wouldn't ordinarily work with, like as a music attorney, sometimes a new business manager comes onto the scene, or a new manager, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I like working with people I like, so I like the same old, once I get into a groove, I want to do business with you over and over and over again. And so if it's working on one angle, I'm going to try to bring more things to the plate. But the good news is sometimes when you don't work with the same old people over and over, you get introduced to someone new. And that's the wonderful opportunity is like to meet someone like you. Forget about the band, man. You're going to be involved with 25 more bands that may be or may not be.
I love that this is the Hype Scott Up fucking show. This is amazing. Keep going. Actually, let's not even ask you any questions about your career. Tell me how great I am.
Scott, you're pretty great. But this is
an advice show.
Let's be honest. That is what matters the most. Is relationships in this business.
I was going to say that. And, well, in every business, actually, but in music, which is very social industry. I mean, I want to take someone on, like, if they drink, I want them to be the kind of person I'd like to have a beer with. If not, I'd want them to be the kind of person that I could spend some genuine, sincere, quality time with.
If they eat ice cream, you want to go to Cold Stone
with them. Let me tell you something. If they're not lactose intolerant, I want to go to Cold Stone with them. And for the record, that was delicious on every single level. Emily.
Yeah.
If you could say five adjectives right now to describe this interview so far, other than corny and awesome, what five adjectives would you say? And then we're going to get to some more meat.
Talkative.
Okay.
Informative.
Yes. Are these all going to be adives at the end of it? Can you do three more adives?
Now that you said that, I probably won't be able to.
Fuck.
Great.
Creative. Okay, great-ive. Two more.
Yeah. Creative.
Oh, you showcased that. And?
And, good. Overall, just good.
Good-ive. Yeah. Okay. I like all five of them.
All right. Let's get into it. What do you want to know, Mr. Waldman?
Well, I want to know a lot, but we only have about 40-ish minutes, and we've been going for 6 minutes and 51 seconds. So, when you were growing up, what band kickstarted your love for hard rock?
Well, going way back, the very first concert I ever went to was Quiet Riot.
Damn right.
I'm 46 years old, so... You know,
10 years older than I am,
right? But Quiet Riot debuted at number one with the album Metal Health, and I was 12 or 13 or something like that. And strangely enough, my parents let me go to concerts when I was a little kid, and I went to see Quiet Riot. So that was literally the first.
Where'd you go? What venue?
It was a Palace Theater in Albany, New York.
Damn right. So upstate.
Yes. So a lot of my formative years, my big concerts were Albany, Schenectady, Troy area. Right, so I saw that. In terms of records, that same year, I got Def Leppard, Pyromania, I remember was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Motley Crue, Shout Out to Devil, real, real big record.
So really
for me.
Tame bands.
Yeah,
that's what you're really into,
like that, right? Yeah. And I remember I then immediately got into kind of the next level of like Scorpions, Love at First Sting, Ozzy Osbourne's Bark at the Moon, Judas Priest, Defenders of the Faith, Iron Maiden, Power Slave. Et cetera,
everyone says that Iron Maiden is the best live band of all time, and I've never seen them, and I want to.
Pretty freaking cool. I actually saw them at San Bernardino
a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. I've probably seen the band 25 times. In some iterations, depending on the day and what I had for breakfast, I might start to say that maybe that's one of my favorite bands of all time.
That band is one of those bands where if you love them, like you pretty much metaphorically get a tattoo on your neck. Yeah, it's like Comic-Con for metal.
Absolutely.
It basically is, but their fans are so diehard. I mean, they're the kind of band that could sell at the Rose Bowl. There's not too many of those.
Well, speaking of bands that could sell at the Rose Bowl, and if you want to come talk about what really did it for me, what flipped the switch.
I do.
Made me insane and why I'm sitting here today.
Well, I don't know if that made you insane. I think nature and nurture, but continue.
A little band called Metallica. You
never
heard of
them.
Right?
Yeah.
That's really what kind of blew my mind and got me addicted to music.
Quite a few people in my feed this weekend saw them. I wish I was one of them. I know you were away, but...
Yeah, and this is the new maturity of Eric German that I actually chose going away to a memorial service for one of my relatives over going to see Metallica at the Rose Bowl.
Dude, you sold out.
But, no, I'm going to San Diego this weekend, right?
Is it with Avenged Sevenfold and Gojira?
Yes, and it's a good friend of mine is the tour manager for Avenged Sevenfold, so he's being so kind as to take care of me and welcome me as his guest.
Pretty
so
sick.
I am going to literally drive to San Diego to see a rock show that I'm not associated with in terms of work, which is kind of strange.
I'm doing that on Friday.
Yeah.
San Francisco Warp Tour. None of my bands are playing.
Okay, so check this out. There's a little chess thing going on. They're like we need to there's Warped in San Diego on Friday.
Saturday.
On Saturday, that's right. And on Saturday, I also, though, need to be at Slayer, Lamb of God, and Behemoth at the Forum.
Wow, I saw Slayer with Metallica, the Big Four Festival.
There you go.
They needed a ballad.
Well, you know, Rain of Blood is probably the greatest thrash metal record of all time.
It's up there.
And I now have an idea, which I'm now going to spill the beans on because it'll probably never get done and somebody else should go do it. But we need like a heavy bass remix album of Rain of Blood. That would be cool. I think that's what 2017
You mean electronic means. Remix?
Yes.
Okay. You know, Skrillex did that with Korn.
Yes. Well, I'm saying someone should do it with Slayer.
Yo, Emily, get on that shit. Right. utilize all your EDM, EDC contacts and make that happen.
And, well, in any event, there's a lot going on this weekend because then you have Warped Tour Pomona. Also,
are you going to that?
I think I'm going to Metallica. It's like, am I going to Metallica? Am I going to Warped Tour? Am I going to Slayer? What am I doing? Which day am I doing
These are good problems to have, dude.
Yes, yes. Well, I guess. Either they're good problems to have or they're problems to have. But one way or another, yes.
Subjective.
Champagne problems, right? Some people have First to worry world about problems. What to eat. I have to worry about which day to see Warped Tour and which
yeah,
day to see
Metallica. Yeah, well, I mean, here's it's like if you're in business class, you're like, I'm sorry, the foie gras is kind of weak. You know, I'm oh, please, please. And when the flight attendant's like, I'm so sorry. You know, so I get it. I mean, all I do is fly business class everywhere all the time because, like, I am so fucking rich. And what I do is I just spend money and just, like, honestly, the udon is shit. Anyway, I'm done with that. I'm kidding. I'm not rich. So I guess you got introduced to metal or hard rock or whatever. For the record, you brought Motley Crue. My second favorite music book of all time is The Dirt.
And what's the first?
It's called Powerhouse. It's a book about CAA and how they made it. It's by far.
I believe you told me about that.
I did, but I will tell everyone listening, it is by far and away the best book about entertainment I've ever read. My wife is really into fiction, and I have an English degree, and I used to be really into fiction. Like Roald Dahl and Beverly Cleary and Judy Blume books were what changed my life as a young man or a young boy or a young little fucking bitch, whatever. But I started really delving into nonfiction, and I guess sometimes when I need escapism, I watch really dumb comedies that are fictional. But when I'm reading, it's exclusively nonfiction, and Powerhouse changed my entire approach to artist management.
Which was better, Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, or Powerhouse?
Powerhouse.
Got it.
Matilda is my favorite book of all time.
So if we're talking about The Dirt.
Yes.
The Dirt. Heck of a movie. Can't wait to see that finally.
It's a movie?
I mean, heck of a book. Oh, okay. Can't wait to see that finally become a movie. I believe it's been in production for about a decade in various forms.
Possibly so longer.
it's my understanding that that will be a motion picture at some point. And if they get it right, it could be great, right?
It could be.
The Heroin Diaries was really
That's
cool,
That's Nikki Sixx's great book.
But I'm more visual, I would say, in terms of favorite rock books. I say, what's the best rock documentaries? And I've been extolling the virtues this week of Beyond the Lighted Stage, which is a Rush documentary.
Never saw it.
Rush has got it. I don't know.
They're one of those cult bands. Right? No. Here's the thing. I'll be straight with you. Not only is Geddy Lee a Jew. No. But the thing is that Rush I would put in the same category of cult fans like Iron Maiden. Because, like, you know how nuts Coheed fans are. Multiply that by infinity. And those are Rush fans. I am into them. As musicians, it's just sometimes Geddy Lee's voice I'm not 100% into, but I'm not even 100% into John Lennon's voice all the time.
Well, check this out. You ever heard of the book Ready Player One? And you know,
no.
Steven Spielberg.
I've heard of
a new
him.
Movie coming out this summer or this fall or next year or some point. They debuted a trailer at Comic-Con.
Uh-huh.
It's called Ready Player One. It's about dystopian science fiction where everyone's looking
like Bradbury at, type stuff.
Everyone's plugged into virtual reality.
Okay.
I don't really know much about it, but I know it's a hotly anticipated film.
Mm-hmm.
And about 1 minute into the Comic-Con trailer, there's a nice little treat for Rush fans. So go on YouTube and check that out.
I think I will. Emily.
Yes.
Putting you on the spot because technically a question is putting someone on the spot, and I still don't understand that phrase, putting on the spot, because I like being asked questions. Anyway, putting you on the spot, have you ever read a book, a nonfiction book? Because you go to a pretty entertainment school. He's laughing. That's
have
fine.
Have you ever read a nonfiction book?
I'm trying. Yeah. Forgive me. Have you ever read a word? No. Have you ever read a nonfiction book about a performer or a suit or whatever in the music industry, or have seen a documentary about one of those that really got to you? Because I think you'd like Supermensch. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't, but I have done both of those things.
Well, you've done everything. So that's the beauty of context. Like right now, it could be a Facebook quote like, have you ever read? That would be the quote.
The Defiant Ones on HBO was really cool.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen. That's the one with
Dre. Dr. Dre. Yes.
Yep.
Really cool. Really cool.
Is there one that really sticks out to you? And by the way, we're almost done with the first half. That just shows that time
flies.
You haven't
asked me any lawyer questions.
We'll get to that. Well, you'll bill me for the second half. So we'll get to it. I mean, I try to make this actually real and not like. So anyway, you.
Yes.
What would you say? What do you recommend? Because you are. Eric is 10 years older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
You're 20.
Yeah.
So I am 16 years older than you. So, and you're, you know, older than a 19-year-old. So what would you say really got to you?
There's a book out by a girl named Vicki Hamilton, if you know that name. She was...
I know Vicki.
Guns N' Roses' cool, first manager, and she wrote a whole book called Appetite for Dysfunction, kind of about the early days of Guns N' Roses.
I read the Slash book,
yeah,
and that was okay. I think I'd like this more. I want to hear what it's like with the thankless job struggle.
Oh, yeah. I have it. You can borrow.
You just did like a coffee talk with Linda Richman.
All right. You ready for a good Slash story?
Yeah. If it doesn't involve my tires.
A good Slash Eric German story?
Yes. Well, it's your show.
The only time I ever met Slash, he got my autograph.
What?
Ready for that?
Whoa. Can you elaborate?
He was at our law firm.
Okay.
And he was parked in Valley Parking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was after hours. And I came out to walk through the lobby. And there's Slash, which is
top hat and all.
Wow. No, believe it or not, I think it was probably a baseball cap. And he needed a partner's signature on his
validation.
And I was right there. So it's very strange for a kid that grew up, you know, I went to their shows and all that.
Play it cool, Eric.
I walked through the door. There's Slash. He's like, hey, man, can you sign this for me? I thought that was
pretty
cool.
Dope. Fist bump.
There you go.
I learned not to use fist pound. Anyway, so we just did a fist bump. I've never met anyone in Guns N' Roses, nor have they requested my autograph. So I guess we can get to the legal thing, but I do want to talk about Syracuse. So we could get to that next segment. But give us, I guess, some insight into your current job and your current position, because I really you brought up, obviously, that you were a partner. So I want to hear about, I guess, an elevator pitch as to what you do now. And then we'll cut it short and go more detail-oriented.
I thought we were going to talk about Jim Boeheim, Carmelo Anthony, and the Syracuse Orange.
But dope. We will. Well, my dad went to Syracuse.
So elevator pitch. An elevator pitch for who I am. I am an entertainment and intellectual property lawyer. I'm a partner at Mitchell, Silberberg, and Knupp LLP, which is a firm founded in 1908. We have offices in Los Angeles, New York, and D.C., and
you're so smooth at this. I just want you to know that.
I've said it before, right?
It sounds like so. It's amazing.
I started as an IP litigator. I was really into music, tech, and copyright. That was kind of my angle in life. I went to law school in 1994, which is the perfect time for all
this. So I had my bar mitzvah.
And I'm 10 years old. We will emphasize that. I had done, I went to school with the idea that music was going to change from physical to digital, and I was obsessed with the idea.
In the 90s?
In 1994.
No, but that's some real foresight.
Right. So I got out of school in 97 with this expertise in copyright, tech, and music, and went to work for a big law firm in New York City that had a client called the Recording Industry Association of America, who were litigating a case against something called Napster, and I was the kid on the Napster case, and we won. And long story short, I ended up out here to continue that work. We took on a case against something called Kazaa. We took that to the Supreme Court of the United States and won. I then became National Coordinating Counsel for End User Lawsuits, which was meant that I was supervising litigation against grandmothers and teenagers, and I said, oh my God, I'm the internet police, and this is not what I wanted to really do. And
I had a roommate. I had a roommate in college because Napster, I guess, came to a head around my freshman, sophomore year in Kazaa. And I had a roommate who, obviously I'm not going to get specific, but who was contacted, and it almost got really bad for him.
That was somebody that worked for me, probably.
I mean, here's the thing. They were stealing music. So, I mean, we can go into this in a bit because I actually am not one of those people who talk shit on Lars. I understand his argument.
Well, long story short... I had gotten out once I made partner in January 2007. I was allowed or kind of
10 years
insisted
ago
on going out and building my own client base right from there. So I had learned a lot about the music business from that experience. I also used to play in rock bands in high school and play guitar, bass, drums. And some of the guys that I had played music with had gone on to varying degrees of success. And one of those guys was in a band that was signed to Century Media Records. And I went to the show.
Label.
And I met the owner and I got to chatting. And he said, you should be our lawyer. I said, well, I don't know how to do record deals. Don't worry, we'll teach you. And That started to this day. I've been a lawyer for Century Media.
Is that like a general counsel title?
I'm outside counsel, and I do work for them whatever they need.
That's right? Amazing.
They sold to Sony Music a couple years ago
for a chunk of change.
But I'm still working with the company. It's very cool.
I think it's cool too. But we're gonna cut you off quickly and just say that we will start part two with Syracuse, and if you want. You could talk about Syracuse the entire time. I'm so cool with that as someone who worships his father. So, Emily, when you think of Syracuse University, what one adjective comes to mind?
Adjective?
Or word. Or verb. Okay, I'll take it.
The party school.
I would say the same. I think of the Carousel Mall. That's what I think of.
I think of orange.
I mean, that's fair. So, Syracuse is probably in my top five. Actually, take away probably. It's... I'd say my favorite school in the world is Michigan. Close second is Brandeis, where my wife went. Close third is Wisconsin. And tied for fourth are Syracuse and New Paltz. So you made my top five.
Can I amend my answer? I don't want to say whatever you want. I want to say 2-3 zone. And there's probably at least five people out there that know what I'm talking about.
And I am not one of that at least. So stick around for Waldman's Words. Listen to whatever is playing right now because it's awesome. Hey, Emily Burke.
Yeah.
You're laughing because you know what's up.
She knows she's in trouble.
Who's Howard Stern?
A radio personality.
That's fair. I'd say he's a little bit more than that, but that's a really good oversimplification.
King of all media.
Judge on America's Got Talent, right?
If that's his epitaph, I'm very sad. I think that's a very, very, very cool show in some regards, but Eric said it. He wrote Private Parts, Miss America. He's a Long Island Jewish boy. He's my boy, and I've never met him.
Basically put Sirius XM radio, it may not even exist today.
He has his own fucking station on Sirius XM. Like when you go on Sirius, it's like, should I listen to rock? Should I listen to pop? Should I listen to an old Howard Stern episode? The dude probably has I'm going to guess this right now. What do you think his net worth is? I'm guessing like $400 million. I'm going
to
look this up on the air because I want to be depressed. By the way.
Yes.
Question for you. Before we talk about Syracuse, who do you think the number two living musician of all time as far as net worth goes? Who do you think it is? Because number one's Paul McCartney. I will say that. And I swear if I surveyed 50 people this, all of them would get it wrong.
Taylor Swift.
Is that your final answer?
Sure.
She's not in the top 10.
Okay.
Is it? I want to say Ringo Starr.
He is, I think, 11 or 13.
Oh.
Honestly, I'll give you each one more guess because I think you can get closer, but I don't think you guys are going to get it. And that's not because I don't have faith in your brains or your knowledge. It's because I was so fucking shocked when I found this out. But then after I thought about it for a tenth of a second, I'm like, that makes sense.
I was trying to zag when you said zig, but I'll say Dr. Dre.
Dr. Dre is actually one of the – he's either number 4, 5, or 6. I believe that number 4, believe it or not, is Diddy. Dre is number 5. And obviously, Beats and Straight Outta Compton, all that stuff really upped his ante. And every time Eminem sells a record, he gets money. Like, can you imagine that? And I believe there's another and Jay-Z. So it's like 3 consecutive people in the top 10 are hip-hop, and only one of them is a woman, and that's Madonna. So I'm removing a bunch of people right now, and it's not someone in the foreground. That's my hint.
Is it Tom Petty?
Nope. He is definitely in the foreground. And I'd say he's in the top there. It's Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Woo!
Phantom of the Opera. Every time Joseph E. Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat is playing in Fargo, Munich, he gets money.
When I got in the car today, I did not expect that both Judy Blume and Andrew Lloyd Webber would be part of our conversation.
Well, they're as metal as it gets.
But I did throw in Iron Maiden, Metallica, and Rush.
Yeah, I mean, hashtag credibility. I have hashtag none. Hashtag YOLO. So I'm looking up Howard Stern's net worth. While I do that, can you please describe your years as an orange?
Yeah, but do you even want anyone to know why you asked him? You opened up asking Emily about
I would like to. Yeah, actually, fine.
That was kind of out of left field, right?
It was, but technically conversations are tangential. So I would love it if you would explain why, because you requested that I call her out, because, and rightfully so.
Yeah, exactly. And so much I wanted to call you out, Emily, that I made sure we came back to it. I'm triple underlining
circular.
Bold, all caps, italics,
the
right?
The show started so nice.
He says, I teach kids Syracuse University. I teach their music business program. So I'm adjunct professor of the Syracuse University in Los Angeles program.
Word.
And we teach the kids primarily in the Marty Bandier School of Music, which is part of now the SI Newhouse School of Public Communications.
So is that anyway, the number one communication school in the country? I believe it is.
As far as I'm concerned, it is.
Well, as far
That's
as I'm concerned,
on my
it is
diploma,
too.
Sir, so.
Damn right.
Scott said to Emily that she was showering her with compliments, as he's so prone to do.
Ah,
and he said that she is his Robin Quivers.
Yep.
And Emily
And then
said,
she made me quiver. I'm just letting you know that right
and
now.
Emily said, I don't know who Robin Quivers is. And when I said Robin Quivers is with Howard Stern, Emily said,
he's
That's
old.
Before my time. And we and so we thought that was kind of funny.
It's anyway. Extremely funny. Generations. I don't think that my parents were stoked on Nirvana when I was listening to Nirvana, Weezer, and Green Day, and I get it. So all I'm going to say is I'm very upset with you.
You know what? For this, I'll take it.
Thank you. I appreciate your masochism.
Well, it is funny that we're sitting here in a radio studio.
In
doing
a radio studio.
Radio. You know, I take it you're going to school for this kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So you would imagine today at 20 years of old age, kids that are going to school for radio don't know who Howard Stern is.
She's going to school for music, not radio, but still. She's actually going to school to be a motherfucking badass, which she doesn't need school to be that motherfucking badass. But what are you specifically studying?
I am an entertainment and arts management major with a business administration and legal studies minor.
Woo! And you're speaking to a legal historian
yeah.
to your right, to my left. So very, very, very quickly, also, give the label a shout-out that you intern for.
I am also a intern at Epitaph Records, where I work in publicity and legal.
Amazing.
Love legal.
It's amazing. Amazing. My favorite label on the planet.
One of my favorite people in the world is Dave Hansen.
Oh, yeah.
You must know Dave, right?
I know Dave.
He's on the board of Merlin, I believe, and one of my clients is Merlin, which is a rights licensing organization for hundreds, if not thousands, of independent record labels. And Dave's also very involved with A2IM, which is the American Association of Independent Music, which I am also counsel to.
I'm going to do another fist bump.
Yes.
And then with the remaining little bit of time, we are not going to focus on Robin Quivers or Emily Burke as much as I love focusing on you. Syracuse.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Syracuse. Sell me on the school. Pretend I am a prospective student who's gotten into Syracuse, who's gotten into many schools.
It's insane, right? The Marty Bandier School of Music is just incredible opportunity. The school really works hard. It's very competitive. These students are on the motherfucking, first time I swear on this.
Whoa.
On the motherfucking ball. They are gunning, coming for the throne. These are young kids. These are kids that are Emily's age that are ready to take on the world. It's highly competitive, and the kids that come out here that are my students are part of, you know, the cream of the crop, because you have to be doing certain level of success to get here. They, instead of taking a semester abroad in Europe, you come to
work study
Los Angeles
stuff.
And they place you at interns with, you know, all the best music managers and booking agents and A&R positions, et cetera, et cetera. From the program, Drew from the Chainsmokers is one of the alumnus.
Small
of the
time.
I had a kid in my class named Michael George that went on to discover and manage an electronic artist called Martin Garrix, and he works with Scooter Braun now. My old intern, Joey Papoutis, manages an artist called Louis the Child now. He also has another artist called Weathen. I don't know if your audience knows the EDM stuff.
I'll be specific.
Focused on
no,
that.
I'll be very honest right. about the audience here. It's everything. Adobe, as a station, I would argue, is more in the alternative world, but alternative is such a vague word.
Right.
So there's people that are really into EDM that listen. There's people that are into death metal.
So I could go on and on and on, but the bottom line is these kids are on it, on point. You see them scattered all throughout the business. I've been doing it for 7 years now, and you know, many of my former students are clients. And
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a great program. They really care. It's a great way to get a leg up. That said, very expensive, kind of a premium service, as they say.
Of course.
Only for those that have the means. Otherwise.
But you got to spend money to make money. I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean.
I think you do.
Do you need to go to college to be a manager of music?
No. But you do need to be a lawyer. And you do need to. I mean, I could argue in favor. I can provide a counter argument for anything. I'm not a lawyer. You'll destroy me. But there's many, many great reasons to study X, Y, and Z at school. And I think a lot of employers hire people with degrees undergraduate degrees because it shows that they can multitask and, you know, kind of compartmentalize and quote unquote excel or be semi-proficient. But
you mean it wasn't my minor in philosophy that got me where I am today?
It was, or was it? So
those were my favorite classes.
Intro to Logic was one of my favorite classes I've taken. But I think that I know someone personally who has a master's in music business who Emily, within 1 week of working for me, knew more of them about the industry.
Got it.
So it is what you make of it. I have a degree in English, which means
I want names.
I'm not going to do that. I plead the fifth. I put my hand up. I can tell you that there's plenty of smart people. Like, I mean, Bill Gates dropped out of college, but there's a lot of college dropouts who are fuck-ups. You really never know, but I am a strong advocate for education, and I'm a strong advocate for pursuing your fucking heart.
Got it.
Look at that, yo. So anyway, Syracuse. What about law school? Tell me about law school.
I went to law school, Boston University School of
Law. The most expensive school in the country. Sorry.
I had a wonderful time there. I had great success. One of my first professors was one of the world's foremost experts in copyright law. She had been – her theory of law and economics, theory of fair use in copyright was relied upon by the Supreme Court of the United States in a case – involving the Sony Betamax machine in 1982.
Still down. Do you know what the Betamax is? Do you know what a VHS player is?
Yes.
What is it?
I grew up on VHS.
You were televised on VHS? Remember those really padded Disney movies on VHS?
Yeah.
The big box.
Yeah. It's like those old CD box. Yeah. Okay.
If you look at the Little Mermaid cover, there's like weird stuff drawn on the front.
So on this metal show, we talk about the Little Mermaid and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Bringing credibility to the hard rock.
I know more about Disney movies than probably most men.
What's your favorite Disney cartoon? There is only one right answer.
Aladdin?
Yes. That's it. Sorry. My sister's third birthday party was the Little Mermaid one. Yeah, Lion King is actually number two. I think they peaked after, like, those two were, I believe, back to back. It was like Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King.
In my house, Moana is surprisingly popular, which features The Rock singing.
The most charming guy in the world. Right. But I think I had a question for you. What was, I don't know, before we got onto this Disney tangent, which is totally cool, where was I going, or do you have any idea where my brain was?
Betamax.
Thank you. I'm giving him a metaphorical fist bump, not pound. So Betamax was VHS's competitor. It's kind of, do you know what a Laserdisc player is?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, that came before Betamax.
You should have a spinoff show called Ask Emily Shit Up That's Old and see if she knows what it
that's
is.
That's the best title. Emily, Ask Emily Shit Emily, That Is Old.
Do you know, Emily, what's your favorite Led Zeppelin album?
Say one.
One.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, that just is mad cool.
It's
no,
physical graffiti or House is a Holy or.
Taste is subjective, but you're wrong. I think four is the biggest seller. Just because of Stairway, right?
Sure, absolutely. I think that's probably true.
No, I honestly, Led Zeppelin, to me, let's get into this for a second. Led Zeppelin, to me, is not an album band. I can't really listen to their album straight through like I can with the Beatles or the Stones or
okay,
the Who.
Wait. Let me take control of this podcast here or radio show.
Go for it.
Beatles or Stones, white hat or black
hat?
Oh,
my God. Right. Do you want me to answer that?
Yeah.
Beatles, without question, hesitation, or shred of anything in terms of melody and harmony.
Yeah. Beatles, more sophisticated musical, probably broke more barriers and accomplished more firsts in 10 years of existence.
Less than 10.
Than the Rolling Stones, right? Rolling Stones, a blues-based band that basically sold their souls to the devil, there's no doubt, right?
Sympathy for one.
You know, the bad boy swagger.
But they're not bad boys. They're rich. They're rich, freaking preppy London people, whereas the Beatles were actually bad boys from Northern England who struggled, and it was more of a show. Like, I love the Stones. I do. But back to them and Led Zeppelin and the Who.
Watch Crossfire Hurricane.
I did. It's amazing.
Right?
I believe that's Scorsese.
It starts off with Mick Jagger with a tray of what he calls salt and vitamins, right, on
They're
definitely bad boys.
They are definitely a cooler band. I would say that, but I put it in quotes. Right. But anyway, in regards to Led Zeppelin, they're just not an album for me, but taste is subjective, so I'm wrong too. So let's get to law school, when you graduated, you touched upon briefly.
I worked for that professor who exposed me to the concept of copyright law, and it was just a perfect storm, perfect time. I mean, I'll be honest, I was a metalhead growing up in upstate New York with long hair down my ass, back patches, standing out in the woods
about a bonfire jacket.
With the whole jam, dude, and the big high-top white sneakers and, yeah, you know, dude. And Testament on the back of my jacket and the whole deal. And
I want to see a picture.
To college, they are on my private Instagram account that you can't see unless you're friends with me.
I can.
But the when I got to college in 1988, no one.
What year were you born?
97.
No one at my school really liked this stuff like I did. And there was no internet, and I was isolated from.
Well, no,
from
Al Gore invented the internet in the 60s.
So, but you know what I mean.
No, like, no, community
there was
for
no
it.
No community. Mm-hmm. And so I had to put on a nice shirt and join a fraternity, try to meet girls and the whole deal, right? And I had to kind of disguise my metaldom. But I had found a very early version of dial-up internet service that allowed me to communicate with people on this message board called alt.rockandroll.metal.heavy.
That's a mouthful.
It was a Usenet news group. And I was I quickly found fans in Germany and in Sweden that I was corresponding with and sending cassette tapes back and forth. And I learned about all the Euro metal, like Emperor and Iced Earth and In Flames. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean.
In Flames is great.
Iced Earth is not Euro metal, but you get the idea. Mm-hmm.
I
right?
do.
And the.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Exactly. And so I became obsessed with the idea that music, A, was going to convert from physical to digital, B, that it was going to have the power to unite genres and take niche genres like that and empower them, right? And these are obvious concepts now, but back in that early days. So I had gone to law school with that mission. And
but you embraced it right on, whereas I still think that the labels, had they embraced it from the get-go, I think they'd be in exponentially better shape than they are right now.
You know, the Spotify is a great example of embracing that and the labels are very pro Spotify. I still talk to people, especially in the hard rock and the active rock and the metal world that I work with, that still are not on board with streaming. Mm-hmm. They're still trying to sell physical CDs, and they think that that's where their business lies. And they're sort of, you know, complaining about the rates that Spotify play, and they're mm-hmm. not trying to promote their Spotify links and things like
it's
that.
It's antiquated.
I think that's
now.
Insane.
I right? do too. I mean, obviously live shows, and if you place a song, that could be a good cash grab. But at the end of the day, instead of cowering in the corner and saying fuck technology, I think you should embrace
well,
it.
Well, I'm the biggest music fan that I know. I'm the biggest music fan
in this
sitting
room
in this chair right now.
You are
right?
definitely the biggest music fan in that chair right now.
And I can tell you this, I'm never going to buy a CD again. And I don't buy vinyl. And I don't. And why would I want to buy downloads that clog up and take up space in my phone? You know, I literally had this argument with one of my clients that said, "Well, what are you going to listen to on a plane when the internet?" Like, okay, I'm not going to buy everything so that I have it on my phone mm-hmm. so I can listen to it on plane.
You can download on Spotify stuff. Though. Exactly. If you pay $9.99 exactly. a month, it's basically
exactly.
backlog.
So the bottom line is, I became very. In law school, I was really focused on this idea that music would be empowered by the internet and by technology. Of course, I went on the other side of protecting the old school model because I did want to defend that idea. I mean, you got to be honest. You know, the music industry took a major hit. It's not what it used to
be. No, it's not. When an album debuts at number one, it's a fraction of the sales of what it was like 5 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, it's very rare for an artist to go platinum now. That's why when we're going to actually get to wrapping this up, believe it or not, but like a band like Linkin Park, mm-hmm. they're a diamond band, you yeah. know? And obviously we recently lost Chester, and that's brutal and awful.
I have a friend named Rob McDermott.
Who He's their manager.
Rob was their manager yeah. for 10 years during the most
critical
period.
Till they self-manage, yep.
And I usually say when, you know, people get to talking and if somebody, Rob had something to say and they didn't listen to him or something, I go, whoa, wait. Who here in this room has sold? Raise your hand if you sold 50 million records, right?
Exactly.
Rob's the only guy I know that can raise his hand.
It's insane. And that right now, when you think of the big, big selling artists, the ones who consistently sell, it's like the list is so short. It's Adele. Imagine Dragons in the quote-unquote rock alternative pop world. But it's rare to go platinum now.
Scott, I have an artist. I have a songwriter client that has a co-write on the new Chainsmokers single. the new Chainsmokers single. It's called Honest. Please stream it repeatedly.
Over and over and over and over, Emily.
Okay.
And I believe it's in the top 20 on the Billboard Hot 100 right now. And I went to look because I want to see how's this going to do. I want to count my little something-something, my little share of the world.
Here. As you should.
And I said, what do you think, Emily, this is for you.
Ah, what do you calling Emily out.
I looked at what the last Chainsmokers single did on Spotify.
Is this how the many, closer
how
one?
How many streams?
The song Closer?
Closer's the big hit.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about the last hit, which is like their fifth or sixth.
Something that, just like this, right?
What? How many plays on Spotify do you think? When I looked a couple weeks ago, how many plays do you think?
I have a guess right now without looking. I want to hear
the
yours.
Last single?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say 250 million.
I'm going to say 490 million.
And it was 456 million.
Look at that.
Right? And then when you look at Closer, 1.3 billion.
Billion.
And that's just on Spotify.
Billion.
Right?
All right. So unfortunately, we're going to wrap this up because honestly, I feel like I could have several shows with you.
But the point being.
No, I understand your point, but say it.
The rock stuff is not at 460.
It's not at 160. But believe it or not, I listened to Hoobastank yesterday with my wife on Spotify.
How many plays?
I think The Reason had 120 million.
Woo!
And a bunch of their songs, like, you don't realize how big they are. Okay, so anyway, we're going to wrap this up in a little bit. But, Emily, do you recall who the next four guests are?
Mike Mowry.
Yes, but he's not consecutively next.
Oh.
You got that right. He is soon.
Shane Told.
Yeah.
Corey Rutland.
Yeah, and after Mike Mowry.
Yeah. I'm not doing it consecutively.
Yeah, fuck that.
And Maura from Superior.
Mara, yeah, dude. Like, first of all, every single flyer / post about Walden's Words is Emily. So
true.
I appreciate it. It is true, yeah. And you kill it. And so the next few weeks are stacked with musician / podcast guy, manager / label guy, former band dude guy, and gal who runs a publishing company. So, Eric, I guess to wrap this up, is there any specific thing you want to say on how to reach you, or not even how to reach you, but who you're currently working with?
Well, Scott Waldman books all my appointments, so you can. I'm working.
True.
If you think it's great, that I'm behind the scenes. If you think it sucks, I have nothing to do with it. Right?
Nothing.
But no, the truth is, find me on the internet. I'm everywhere. EJ German on Instagram. EJ German on Facebook. My website for my law firm is www.msk.com.
It's kind of like TISK with an M.
M is in Mary, S is in Sam, K is in kittycat.com.
Can you come up with an acronym for MSK right now?
Mighty Super King.
That's perfect. Those are all Mighty Super King, the law firm of the greatest. So, Eric, thank you so much for coming here. I literally know that your time is extremely valuable. And Emily, close this out with a final thought a la Jerry Springer. Do you know who that is?
I do know who Jerry Springer is. But what I know about Jerry Springer is...
Can I put a chair over your
head?
Yeah,
throwing
now?
The chair.
Steve!
So I'm going to throw a chair and let's get out of here.
All right, so that's probably the worst final thought we've had. So thank you so very much, Emily. Thank you, Eric, for coming by.
Thank you, guys.
We had a ball, I had a ball, and Emily.
Yeah.
I love you.
Thank you.